The Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio is on the air.
James.
Hey, what's going on, dude?
How you doing? How's the weather down there in Texas?
You know, over here, man, we just can't get rid of the damn humidity, you know, and it's, but we're going to have California weather tomorrow. Well, you know, I'm a Texifornian, you know, raised halfway in SoCal and here, so, but yeah, I mean, you know, we just always have humidity here, so it's third eye cinema. Wow, that's weird. Okay, Cyclops. But anyways.
All right, so if you're ready, I guess we can get started.
Yeah, cool.
You're listening to Third Eye Cinema, your source for in-depth discussion of cult cinema. Tonight we're talking music with James Rivera, vocalist for Texas Metal Standby's Hellstar, on the Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio.
Cinema, where the focus is on film that matters, cult, grindhouse, drive-in, independent, and underground film from the dawn of the talkies through the early 90s. Tonight we're talking metal. James Rivera, outspoken and amusing frontman for Texas band Hellstar. We'll be talking about the history of Hellstar, Texas metal as a genre, the musical and cultural horror that was the grunge years, progressive thought in a red state, and of course their new live album DVD, 30 Years of Hell. So join us as we speak to James Rivera of Hellstar, only here on Third Eye Cinema. But first, just to give you an idea what we're referring to, here's Hellstar with the new live version of Winds of War.
to be, no longer do I live to see. Some other time, some other place, no need to face this disgrace. I declare, be the only one, should I do it myself, as they have planned. Write this love, anyone who finds, no, just pass it.
Tonight, we're talking music, and we have with us a man who fronted an act that's become legendary among the new breed of metal acts, a band with a strong traditional vibe.
I feel like I can put on a cape and fly.
A band with a strong traditional vibe who started out over 30 years ago. With his powerful soaring vocals and dramatic range, he made one of the best vocalists in metal today, as evidenced on their new album and DVD, 30 Years of Hell. Please join me in welcoming James Rivera, vocalist for the band Hellstar. James, welcome to Third Eye Cinema.
Hey, how you guys doing?
You have one hell of a history behind you. You've been around as a band since 1982, and you and Larry Barragan have been with Hellstar through every one of its incarnations, with Jerry Abarca being with you since your second album in 1986. That's a pretty impressive feat in and of itself.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we stuck it out. We did disband for a while in the early 90s for a bit, and then I kept the band going under, you know, with other musicians, and then, like, certain ex-members came back here and there, but there was really nothing going on until 95. We did release another thing called Multiples of Black, and it's called The Black Sheep of the Family. It was just bad production and all, but yeah, you know, and though we did, there was one really killer song from that album that ended up on the live album because it was such a strong song, so we brought it back to life. But yeah, you know, it's been a long time, you know, I mean, it's been a long history, and you know, what can I say, we would have never thought it would last this long.
So clear something up. What was with the whole Bill Lionel thing with the original Tom Rogers lineup? Because you went by that name on the 83 demos and Burning Star.
Yeah, it was a joke because my nickname is Bill, and it's a funny thing how it all started, and now my nickname has advanced to even Billy. So there's some people, like Jerry doesn't even, he never calls me James. He always calls me Billy. Billy, and, you know, anyone on the street, hey, Billy, you know, and it's just stayed with me. But the reason why is because when I was, we were all in garage bands, you know, back in the early 80s, and that's how I ended up in Hellstar. Was my band did a contest against Hellstar at this Battle of the Bands thing to win some
right.
equipment back in 1980, I forget, or 81 or something like that. And I was in this band called Scorcher before Hellstar, and when I joined that band, those guys had this thing go, hey Bill, you know, instead of saying hey man, they always said hey Bill. I don't know where it came from, maybe from Mr. Bill or something like that, you know, and then and so when I joined Hellstar, I went into Hellstar saying hey Bill, you know, and then they thought it was cute, so they called me the original Bill. But then it started out as the bass player and the guitar player, Tom Rogers. Yeah, they never called me James anymore. They just called me Bill. And it stuck with me. And so when we started to record the first record, Burning Star, and the president of Combat Records came down, they thought it was funny, this Bill thing. So he said, well, man, I like the Bill thing. And then, you know, and then he says, I think we should give you a stage name. And he says, what's your real name? I go, well, my full name is James Lionel Rivera. And he goes, dude, Bill Lionel. Yeah, and they all made a joke about it. So they threw my name on the album that way.
Wow.
And then the album came out, and, you know, of course, I've got family, I've got friends, and I used to work at a law firm then, and my sister was bragging about, you know, my brother, he made a record with a heavy metal band and showed it off, and these people were buying the record left and right, and they'd be like, well, I don't see no James Rivera on here anywhere. And they'd be like, well, his nickname is Bill Lionel on the record. So it started bothering a bunch of people.
Right.
And then, you know, we're also, the band is also a very, you know, we're all predominantly Hispanic Americans, you know,
right.
Mexican Americans, Hispanic, whatever we are. And because of that, especially here in Tejano land in Texas, you know,
right.
Homo Salina, the Latin American community of organizations, associations were always breathing down my back and thought I was, because I was ashamed of my heritage.
Right.
And I was
right.
like, no, that's not it at all. I said, man, I'm more vato than you are, dude. Don't worry about it, you know. You know, in the orderly homes, you know, whatever, you know. And I'm like, no, I mean, we strongly recommend, dude, you go back to your, you know, like George Lopez would be all like, you know, I have a nephew. His name is Bill. I know a record. Chingao que es eso, you know. His fucking name is James Ray Manacaron, you know. So I was like, all right, well, what the hell, sir? It bothered everybody so much. So on the next record, I'm like, all right, so told the label. I said, all right, no more Bill Lionel. I said, it's, we'll call. I'm going to my real name, James Rivera, a.k.a. Bill Lionel. So no one will get confused and think there was a new singer.
Right.
You'd be surprised how many European interviews I did. Didn't get that. And, but first of all, great album, Remnants of War. Big, big improvement from Burning Star. How did you guys find a singer to sound like Bill? Hans, it's me.
So you actually predated any number of metal bands per se, and I've always stuck to a solid, traditional, melodic sort of power metal sound, particularly with your vocals, which strike me as being akin to someone like John Arch from Fates Warning or Marcia Marcolin of Candlemass. You know, some pretty impressive company there. But one thing I've always heard about you that I didn't really hear in Hellslayer's music is that you're often touted as one of the first speed metal bands predating Agent Steel's No White or Halloween. But to me, to my ears, Hellslayer never really seemed to fit that label. You were more like melodic traditional power metals. Any idea how that label came to be associated with you?
You know, I don't know. I don't know. Speed metal, yeah, because we're, to me, when you think of speed metal, I think of, you know, like Overkill and stuff like that. You know, I mean, I don't think we were really a speed metal band, but Remnants to War, I think because when Remnants of War came out, Burning Star definitely is straight up old school classic heavy metal. Judas Priest, Maiden, all then Dio mixed in a bowl. You know, it's right. plain as day. But when Remnants came out, I think there were some songs that had a lot more double bass and drive in it. And somehow we got categorized as, you know, progressive speed metal. I remember that term. So I was like, oh, okay, that's a new one. And then it went for progressive technical metal, progressive thrash metal, blah, blah, blah. And then now, I mean, we're very proud to say that a lot of people now say that, dude, you guys are called Hellstar Metal. And that's why we ended up with the new website called Hellstar Metal, because it's like you kind of started your own style in a way.
Exactly.
And younger bands nowadays go, hey, well, you know, what are your influences? What do you guys sound like? Well, we kind of sound like Hellstar Metal. You know, it's like, oh, that's pretty neat.
And it's funny because I was just about to say that, because a lot of bands these days seem to cite you as an influence. And yet you were never really, quote unquote, a big mainstream name. You know, Hellstar's always been more of a cult. So how influential do you see yourselves as being in that respect? And what do you think may have kept the band from breaking into the big time?
I think it's because what it is, we were a big influence to a lot of bands. You're right, but these same people that became, like, for example, I know the Forbidden guys are big Hellstar freaks.
Right.
Jeff Loomis was raised on Hellstar. But see, they were also into cult bands. So even though we never made it big, they discovered us. And they were like, man, now this is the kind of riffs I want to play. You know what I mean? So even being a cult band, we seemed to touch some of the most important people that bypassed us and got to bigger levels than we did. How that happened, I don't know. Well, I know. I mean, very simple, because it's an old cliche story, and basically, it's like, oh, we'll point the finger here, there. That, you know what? There's too many fingers to be pointed in every direction, and even some of it at us for our stupidity and our naivety. But the whole thing is that, you know, bad management, bad labels, bad lawyers, bad, you know, it's like everything, you know, bad relationships, yeah, you know, everything piles up, and then the end of the day, you can sit there and harp and blame everybody you want when you're drunk on tequila and start calling people you haven't talked to in 30 years. You son of a bitch, you ruined my life, you know? And then it's like, but it's not going to do any good anymore, dude. You know, it's time to move on.
Exactly. So what's interesting to me is that it seems like, if anything, your voice has improved over the years. And I find this really amazing, since, you know, so many people from that generation, like Jeff Tate or Don Dokken, for example, and I have to apologize for this, but they can't sing the same for lives now. You know, I have two very bad concerts I was doing this past summer to prove it. The only other guy I can think of from back when that has the same sort of dramatic range you do, who still sounds just as good these days, was John Cyrus from Agent Steel.
Well, you know, dude, I'd tell you the truth, man. I'm very blessed, but I do certain things, you know, where I take care of, know how to take care of my voice on tour. Took vocal vocal lessons, and like just any of these other, come on, Jeff Tate was fucking, you know, he was sugar-coated with an opera singer side by side. You would think that that guy would, you know,
exactly.
But the thing is that I don't know. Yeah, it's true. I have gotten better. I know that myself, but all my fans and any critics, I'm like, dude, how do you do it? Because it's scary. And I'm like, well, because I'm the devil. No, I mean, you know, yeah, it's like, that's true. You know, like with someone, hey, have you noticed James never takes his shoes off? It's because he's got hooves. But, yeah, he's the only guy that sleeps with his shoes on tour, you know. But the thing is, there's things that I do, that I religiously do, that I was taught way back in the day, and I stuck to them since this day. And one of them is, for vocalists, sleep is very important on your on tour. And I love it, because I must have been a cat in my past life. That's why my both cats love it when I come home from tour, because we both climb, well, I got two of them, and we climb into bed, and it's like you can tell which one's going to pick up their head first. It's like, oh, he's not, I'm, you know. And I sleep 10 hours a day on tour religiously.
Wow.
So that's one thing that helps. The other thing is that I have little certain things that I do that medically that I've learned how to do every night before I go to bed, when I get up in the morning, things I do. And as long as I do these things, I can sing 15, 20 shows in a row, no problem. And the more, as the tour goes, the stronger my voice gets, which is weird, instead of the other way around and getting tired.
Right.
And then what happens is when the tour is over and I come home, I go to sleep for 2 days because I'm exhausted. I get up, I can't even talk.
Wow.
It's like, I stop singing. Right, right. I guess it's kind of like when you go jogging. If you jog 10 miles a day and you took a week off, the very first day you started again, you almost would only be able to probably do 7 and then start all over again.
And, you know, I already know you're a good guy because you already point out that you're a cat person, so.
Yeah, I'm a big cat lover. Yeah, that's my whole thing. I love cats, you know. I mean, I'm an animal lover, period, you know. My goal is to finally get me a little penguin, but I don't know if that's ever going to happen.
But, you know, on the same point, it's not easy because a guy playing an instrument can be just as good as ever, if not better, just depending on how much they've fallen out of practice. But the voice is a sensitive instrument. You know, you really got to take care of yourself in it. And it's so easy to screw it up permanently, especially if you go for that whole Pantera screaming stuff that was going on in the 90s. You know,
plus, you know, your age is also going to eventually take toll on it somewhere along the line. But, you know, I think for your voice is God-given. You're born with it. I was just lucky that I was born with one that just seems to keep, it gets better as time goes by. And as long as it's doing what it's doing, I probably can keep doing this for another 15 years with a very nice, strong metal voice that will, on recordings and live, I won't go out with, like, well, he quit because at the end of the day, he couldn't even, you know, he was sounding like George from Cannibal, and, you know, that just didn't sound right, singing Baptized in Blood, you know?
Speaking of Pantera, talk to us a little about the Texas metal scene, because I'm actually more familiar with the Texas punk scene with MDC, DRI, and Reverend Horton Heat. But there were a few heavy hitters coming out of Texas. You know, you got Exhorter, Watchtower, early Pantera when they're still a traditional metal band, and yourselves. So was it a big scene, or did it really just center around 4 or 5 major acts?
You know, no, it was a big scene. I mean, Texas was the thing. I mean, Texas metal is considered very legendary in its own, all of us included in their Solitude, Eternus, all that stuff, you know.
Okay.
We were considered of a very importance to the Europeans even more so. Like, a lot of Europeans, if you ask them, what was your best scene? I like the Bay Area. But then you get 3 out of 5 go, Texas metal was the shit, man! You know, yeah, and it's like, so, yeah, we did some damage, you know. I don't know what it is. I guess it's just the cowboy in us or something. You know, but I always tell everybody, dude, you live where I live, where it's hot and humid 80% of the year, and at Christmas time, you don't know whether you're going to throw a turkey in the oven or grill hamburgers in the fucking backyard. You know what? You're a miserable, sweaty person. And I tell you what, not only that, it's so hot and humid, that got you aggravated. You'll sit in traffic for a while, even with the air conditioner blasting, you're still sweating a fucking pile of water. And then, on top of that, we're getting older. Jesus Christ, well, no wonder why we're riding heavy, dark shit now, you know?
You've been in any number of bands yourself, including some recent touring stints in Agent Steel and Vicious Rumors, and an interesting act called Vigilante, which was essentially Hellstar without Larry, and whose demo appeared alongside Hellstar's Demolition demo on that James Rivera Legacy album. So what happened there? Why was there a brief breakup in the early 90s? Was it just the whole grunge thing?
Yeah, I mean, you know, dude, everybody got murdered by that whole situation. You know, I mean, the 90s were so depressing for me. I mean, I even felt like one of those dudes in that band, and I didn't even play that shit. You know, I'm like, oh, man, you know, hey, anybody got any heroin? I mean, may as well, right? Can't beat them, join them, you know? I mean, you know, yeah, better stop doing the blow because there's nothing to be all excited and hyper about anymore, you know? So, you know, and it's like, give me the other stuff. I mean, I want to feel like these dudes. And then, yeah, it just, you just... it's hard enough when the scene is going great for you to try to stay in the race and all the competition you got going around you, you know, with every other band trying to make it in the world. But then again, when you got, it's just like, you're just not the same anymore. You know, you're almost the guy that everybody's laughing at in the mall because your hair's still long, you're still wearing black, you still look like you at least bathe, you know, and yeah, you know, and so it just gets to the point where you're just like, you know, man, I'm giving it up. And you know, that's really what, yeah, I mean, you can't blame Larry. He put everything in his heart and soul into this, and, you know, Metal Blade dropped us because they were signing Galactic. Yeah, see, everybody jumps aboard the bandwagon, you know, so, oh, well, let's get us one of those dirty bands, you know, and so, yeah, you know, it gets discouraging. I, on the other hand, I think that my personal life was going through so much turmoil at that time with millions of other personal issues that I guess I didn't care, and I just thought, well, if I starve to death in the street, fuck it, that's what I'll do. I'm not selling out. I'm not putting a flannel shirt on. I'm not growing a goatee, and I'm not cutting my pants into shorts. Fuck you, you know, and I'm still going to sing in key. I don't give a goddamn, you know? And, yeah, I said, you know what? If nobody wants me, fine. Nobody wants me. I'll just, you know, Hellstar, no matter what ever happened, even in the mid-90s, you know, Space Hog was the band. I was throwing shit out there from the Buzz Day. Yeah, I'm sure you remember that, yeah. You know, all these weird bands that made it, you know, when I'm sitting there going, like, man, I have masterpieces, and these damn heroin addicts are passing me by. You know, it didn't matter. Hellstar still could play to a crowd of 500 people in Houston, always. We always at least had that respect of our hometown. So I just kept artificial members, kept different incarnations of Hellstar moving along just so I could keep playing. But you know, you can only do that two or three times a year, and other than that. But, you know, my time came around again in the 90s. And then here when Metal Blade dropped me, they're calling me in 97 going, hey, do you have like some kind of a Hellstar band together?
Right.
Well, for what? You didn't even want that shit. I go, well, things are changing. And it's because I stuck around. I was one of the first few of the front, you know, I was a forerunner of the new power metal movement to come. And since then, I've been back ever since, yeah.
But you did get that together at one point for 95's Multiples in Black, which you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
So what was the story?
Well, really what it was, like I said, we never really, the band never disbanded. I just kept it together. Larry left, and then I kept that incarnation of Hellstar. Rob came back for a little bit, which we called Vigilante. Then Rob left, and then we got another guitar player named Mike Heald, and then we started to do the Vigilante demo. We were going to do it Vigilante. Ellison came into the project and he produced half the project, but he said, I recommend go back to the name Hellstar, because everybody knows that name. And that's what happened. We went back to the name Hellstar.
Uh-huh.
And so we stayed Hellstar until 97. I called it a day for the whole band, and I moved to California to join a band called Chaotic Order out of Escondido. And the band was kind of a mixture of Alice in Chains meets Queensryche meets Pantera. So I'm thinking, well, the power metal, my thing is never going to come back. You know, everybody's done. Well, maybe this isn't so bad. At least I get to be myself in this thing. It was a weird combination. And Chaotic Order was a perfect name for it. And then Metal Blade loved it, and they gave them the demo, and they were going to, like, you know, well, we want to sign it, but we really want something to sound like Hellstar. And that's how the whole thing started off. You know, I'm like, you know what? Are you guys Nazis? Are you guys just, is this some kind of psychic mental game you're playing with me? You know, I mean, I didn't know what to think anymore, you know? And finally, that's when Destiny's End came to birth, because I found them in L.A. When I was told that, I just so happened to get lucky and got a phone call from a friend, because the emails weren't even in yet. A phone call from a friend of mine out of New York, New Jersey area, a small label called Sentinel Steel or something.
Right.
And said that there's this band called New Eden, James, that I really think you need to check out. And when he did, he goes, dude, I'm telling you, it's a rebirth of Hellstar, but just different, faster. And that was New Eden, which became Destiny's End. And then the rest is history. And from there on out, they turned me into a Frankenstein, and I just kept going.
Right. Essentially, the Hellstar was on hiatus for about a decade. And then you guys came back in 2007 with Sins of the Past, which was essentially modernized versions of Hellstar classics. And then you gave us King of Hell and Glory and Chaos in short succession. So how does it feel being back out there? I imagine playing to bigger crowds and getting some of the respect you would do back when.
Oh, dude, yeah. I mean, you know, a matter of fact, somebody asked me a question when I was doing the press in Germany, and they said, can you tell me what was your biggest highlights in your career for Hellstar? And I said, that's very easy to answer. I go, the biggest highlights for Hellstar are now. He goes, what? Yeah, we've been together 6 years, so 30-year anniversary. Take away 6 years, that leaves 24 years. Those other 24 years, they were important. They were there for a reason, but they really weren't our highlights. these are our highlights now. I said, even though then everybody thinks we might have been bigger, we really weren't much bigger than we are now. We were actually in Houston, as always, like I said, but we really weren't. Now we are. Now is where we're globally, I'm noticing, our name is becoming bigger. Our crowds are back to the way they used to be in 1986 in Houston to 1,000 people.
Right.
And Europe, we never did big headlining tours on our own. So we've already done 3 headlining tours on our own over there. So,
wow.
I mean, and it's kind of like strange how it's almost like you don't want to say in a negative way or a sarcastic way, just get rid of the last 24 years. The band's been together for 6 years. How about that? And it makes me feel younger. Fuck it, you know? So.
And, you know, I have to agree with you because this was a very good live album. And I know there's a DVD associated with it as well. I really think the sound and your voice are much more beefed up and powerful than the original recordings. You had mentioned earlier, you cover a healthy selection of Hellstar classics on 30s of Hell, 2 Off Burning Star, 3 songs each from Remnants of War, Distant Thunder, and Nosferatu. And from your later albums, you got 1 Off Mopples in Black and 3 each off King of Hell and Glory of Chaos, which is a lot of material. I presume this doesn't all hail from the same show unless you're trying to break Bruce Springsteen's record for concert length.
No, this was all one show.
Wow. That's seven.
Yeah, and we had one shot at it. So this isn't like a lot of bands will go on tour because they've already got it in their head to do a live album. So they go on tour and they take professional stuff and record every show. And they get to pick and choose the best nights. You know,
right.
All these songs were tarred. We didn't have that. We had one shot at it. It's like, okay, guys, it's the Super Bowl. Are we going to make a fool out of ourselves or are we going to come home with the ring? We came home with the ring. So there you go.
You got the Heisman because that's really impressive.
Oh, we were on pins and needles, trust me. I mean, we rehearsed religiously for this. We're now to the point where we know we're going on tour and we haven't seen each other in a month. And we go like, all right, so what day are we going to rehearse? And it's like people go like, what? What day? You mean you guys didn't rehearse a lot? I go, no, God. It's like riding a bicycle. If I can't sing this stuff backwards like The Exorcist, then I need to forget it. You know what I mean? So, but for this show, we did actually get in there like, hey, we're practicing for the Super Bowl, guys. And we went in there quite a few times and really narrowed everything down and just said, okay, it's time to go. We got one shot at it, guys. We can't screw up anything because there's no going back. We pulled it off.
One thing that was interesting I noticed was all the tracks you pulled off Nosferatu hail from the concept portion of the album where you're addressing the Dracula story. Was this deliberate or did you just feel those songs were a bit stronger than the rest of the album?
No, it was deliberate too. We there was still one more we kind of wanted to do also, just that we ran out of time and there was still one left. The curse has passed away. But yeah,
right.
we thought that the fans would kind of get that and go like, wow, they did the majority of the Nosferatu thing, which was really cool. Because I'm a big vampire fan and stuff like that. I mean, that my whole thing is the goth world. I mean, I'm a metalhead, but you'll find me at goth clubs, you know. Yeah, hanging out with the vampires, you know what I'm saying, and looking like one myself. And then it's like, that's a Bauhaus song. The next thing you'll find me dancing in the dance floor. And it's like, is that James from Hellstar? No, I'm his brother. I'm Bill Lionel. Yeah. I'm the unproud Mexican. Yeah, exactly.
You know, I'm liking this. This is good. Given that you, Larry, and Jerry have been there from the beginning or close to it, what's the deal with the second guitar and drum chairs? Because you've cycled through a laundry list of members over the years.
You know, it's always because of the fact that we're just kind of, we have a system, and then you have people that come in, and it never failed. Every time we got people that came in, they came in as if I was given the chance to sing in Black Sabbath, and how honorable would I be? Would I even question anything? You know,
right.
I always wonder, Tony, how come you don't shave your mustache? You know, like, get the fuck out of here. You're fired, you know? It's like, yeah, I just, you know, you don't question a damn thing, you know? And it's like, you would just be like, oh, but then as time goes by, they'd be nothing without us. So, you know, we're the stronger part of the band. And then you sort of start feeling like, hey, yeah. And then you hear it from, what makes it worse is you start hearing it from people. And then you're like, okay, you know, that's like, yeah, I married him, but I don't love him. It's just because it's money. He's ugly as shit. You know, I got a really hot guy on the side, you know what I'm saying? And it's kind of like, you know, and then you just kind of go, oh, okay, well, if you can do much better, there's the door. Adios, amigo. You know, so basically, a lot of times that happened, and that happened in a couple of cases. But it's just that, you know, when you're not an original member, it takes time to adapt, and sometimes you do and sometimes you don't. And you got your little nucleus, and you got your little powerhouse, you know. That's just the way it is.
So are you involved in writing the lyrics at all, or is that all Larry? Because I read an interview where he said something quite interesting in that he tried to play devil's advocate and capture both sides of the story in his lyrics with the hope that fans might come away with some compassion and empathy for others, essentially saying that, you know, the world's never black and white. There's always extenuating circumstances. circumstances and reasons for other people's behavior, and that life really takes place in shades of gray, which is not the sort of thing you expect to hear from a band coming from a traditionally red state. I really found that surprising. So are you involved in this, or is it all Larry?
No. Me and him write all the lyrics, and we both equally. I used to write the majority of them, but he's gotten into writing, so we're about half and half. We have a really cool thing that where he starts something, and then he'll come up with a verse, a pre-chorus, and a chorus, and then he gets a brain block, or he just wants me to continue it and throw my spin on it, but he'll tell me what his idea was of the song, and it just always comes out so intellectual at the end of the day, and then it's like he can't believe that I just ran with it, and then my lines that I come up with, and he's like, dude, that line right there, oh my god, how did you come up with that? And I was like, because I was good in school with literature, you know, that was my strong point. But no, I mean, you know, so that's kind of how we do things.
So what are your personal favorite Hellstar albums? Because Rising from the Grave Box, that only included Distant Thunder and Nosferatu. I figured it'd at least be the first four albums.
Yeah, because they're two different labels for one thing. But, you know, my favorite album, I think, today, I would have to say, I mean, I'm very, very proud of Glory, but I still say The King of Hell, really, it's my favorite because I think it's the starting point of Hellstar today and forever. That album really shows the band has musically is even better than we were when we were younger. Everybody all the way around, it shows my vocals were the stronger than anything I've ever done, times 20. It's the starting point of showing that, whoa, this is pretty heavy and dark, man. And it was kind of like, yeah, get a hint, people, and it's going to go heavier and darker. Because why? It's humid and we're getting fucking older. So when Glory came out, King of Hell was the setup, to let people know that, yeah, they're back and they're stronger than ever and darker and heavier than ever and go, yep. And so if we do something to live, don't be surprised. But then you'd be surprised how many old school people. And, you know, there was, maybe even a handful of them that were a little upset when Glory came out. Like, oh, what are you doing? It's way too heavy. You know, please give me Burning Star again. And it's like, dude, if you want Burning Star again, go buy it. You know, there's no way that we could even think like that anymore, you know. So that was then, this is now. And so we're busy writing the next studio record, which we plan to put out next October. And I think we finally got to where I think the next one's going to be the one. I think it's going to be the one that's just gonna, that's it, finally going to get to the peak of the mountain, and now the ride is all downhill. Like, hey, now we see the treasure down there, good, it's all downhill. Glory is heavy and as fast as it's ever going to get. So that right there tells you that it's not going to be any more than that. But the riffs and everything are going so much darker again towards the medieval harmonic minor Nosferatu sounding stuff that it's going to be a perfect combination of Glory and Nosferatu.
So do you have anything else you wanted to plug, or do you want to point listeners to your website or your Facebook page?
Yeah, you know, one thing that's for sure, please, everybody, to take notice that our website is hellstarmetal.com, and because everyone's Kim Gillens, this old one called hellstar.com, and there's nothing there. So it is hellstarmetal.com, and of course Facebook, Hellstar official page, and then you've got Facebook, James Rivera, and you can find about anything that I'm doing or Hellstar is doing and whatever else. You are in California, right?
No, I have a friend that runs the studios out there, but I'm in New York.
Oh, okay. Well, I kept talking about California, all proud. Well, anyways, hey, you New Yorkers, you take care. And matter of fact, I know we're going to be coming up that way sometime in the new year. I don't know exactly when, but we're working on some stuff now. Just keep your eyes open, ears open, and you guys will know when we're headed that way.
With that, James, I'd like for joining us here on Third Eye Cinema, and we'd love to have you back on and talk to your next album.
You got it, brother. Take care, Gene.
And to close out our interview with James, there's another one from Hellstar, 30 Years of Hell. This is Run With The Pack.
Cheers, everybody. Thank you, guys. Let's give a big hell yeah to the cameras, and let's show the world what we're all about. Yeah. Tomorrow I'm going to look like Burt Reynolds. I'm going to grow a bunch of hair on my chest. Are you ready to run? see those horns in the air. Ow! Ah!
Run with the pack!
Godfather of Gore himself, Herschel Gordon Lewis. If you'd like to contact us here, comments, suggestions, or you're a filmmaker or musician and like to join us on air, email us at thirdeyecinema@hotmail.com, visit our Facebook page, facebook.com/thirdeyecinema, or our new website, thirdeyecinema.wordpress.com. Third Eye Cinema brought to you by the Big Papa Online Network and Blog Talk Radio. This or any other Third Eye Cinema broadcast, just visit our website or Facebook page for links to the shows in question. All Blog Talk Radio shows are available for archive listener download at your convenience.